Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, survivors, caregivers, and all of our followers that have been tuning in and following our positive form of hope, inspiration, and education that we are sharing on a daily level to all areas of the globe that are helping end the silence of brain injuries, also educating on the different ways to enjoy your brain, protect it, and of course, having phenomenal guests on our podcast that are continuing spreading and painting the world green. On tonight's show, to kick off our August segment, as always, we have an inspirational, phenomenal guest. The guest I'm referring to is Kelly Plaffin. Kelly served in the U.S. Marine Corps for 5 years. She has a neuroscience PhD student at the Virginia Commonwealth University Department of Anatomy and Neurobiology in the School of Medicine. She also is a recipient of a National Defense Science and Engineering Graduate Fellowship Award that she is using to fund her efforts to identify biomarkers in traumatic brain injuries and help improve both diagnosis and treatment. So without further ado, I know we just titled a lot, but she is an inspirational source that is really helping us not only as survivors, but helping the general public with understanding brain injuries, getting information out there, and changing the perspectives and opportunities of treatment. So I hope everyone is sitting down and ready for a phenomenal show because she's calling in and we're going to get this started. Kelly, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy and inspirational schedule to be on tonight's show.
Of course. Thank you for having me and finding me.
Hey, it's amazing when people have the opportunity to do, and when you're different makers like yourself out there making a positive change for all levels of wellness and especially as survivors, I had to reach out and see if it was an opportunity.
Well, thank you.
You heard me give a brief example of some of the amazing history and works that you do. Would you mind introducing yourself a little bit more?
Sure. I mean, that covered a lot of it. I first started getting interested in neuroscience because neurodegenerative diseases run on both sides of my family. And then obviously the military service brought me closer to traumatic brain injury. And then I married an active duty Marine who is also an explosive ordnance disposal technician. So that brought the whole TBI aspect of everything even further. And I just sort of found myself in the Otten's lab at VCU that does mass spectrometry and stuff, looking at traumatic brain injury markers and things like that. And I just have found my home here, I think.
You know, and that's phenomenal, not only hearing how you understand it and you had motivation on a personal level, but also how you found your home, you believe. And when we have the ability to find our home or really even more enjoy what we're doing, it has more of a symbolic passion behind the wheel. And of course, we can technically say we don't really work a day in our life because we love what we do so much.
Exactly.
Wow. We know, speaking of everything you do, your passion behind it and understanding, and congratulations, not only on your award and your difference making, but also thank you for your service.
Oh, it was, I sat in an air-conditioned building and played on commuters all day. It was great.
Hey, but you still had a huge impact, and you still do, so thank you for your service.
Well, thank you.
You know, and with your fund, how you're going to use some of that fund for advancement with TBIs, I just wanted to see, why do you think finding effective treatments for TBIs is so difficult?
So one of the major reasons, and I know that you've probably covered this a lot on your podcast, is how different each injury is from the way that the injury happens to the way an individual person's body responds to the injury. You could have a dozen people who all get identical injuries, who are all injured the exact same way. They were all like in identical car wrecks or something. Obviously, this won't ever really happen, but their brain injuries would still be completely different from each other just because of factors like age, sex, where they were at in their hormone cycles whenever the injury occurred. There are just so many things that can affect it. that it's hard to pin down a single solitary treatment that will actually help anything. On top of that, we really don't know a whole lot about long-term effects of traumatic brain injury, and it's been so misunderstood for so long. Like, it used to be that if you got a concussion, you weren't supposed to go to sleep, and now we're finding that sleep deprivation is a major cause of secondary insults in brain injuries and causing other things like the memory loss. And so that was terrible advice, but we were following it for forever. So we're just still figuring things out, and we just know so little so far.
That's true. I mean, we do know so little, and it's going to continue to advance. But when you have sources like yourself that want to push it to move forward in the correct way, it's going to be a favor, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and the way research works, you'll find the answer to one question, but end up with 7,000 more questions. So it's just going to constantly be work.
Exactly. It's constantly going to be work. And, you know, speaking of work, I know that a lot of studies are either done with current patients or even animals, trying to get obviously animals that are symbolic and very similar to the way our brain, our brain functions and uses. I want to ask you, how is TBI replicated in the lab, and what animal models do you think are used?
So there's, when the animal models are used, they do try to, we do try to use animals that are at least mammalian. Most often it's rats and mice. There's some studies that have used fruit flies, which is sort of hilarious to think about, because how are you giving a brain injury to a fly? But there's different mechanisms of injury. As I mentioned, there's different kinds of, there's different ways that a human can get injured. There's blast injuries, like what our service members most often experience. Contusional injuries like football players, or what happens in car accidents. And there are even models that look at like gunshot wounds. I can't remember what it is specifically called. It's a ballistic something. But there's controlled cortical impact is supposed to mimic the impact injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that is you have a device that you put the animal in, and you basically drop a controlled drop of a piece of metal onto their head to induce that contusional, very localized cortical injury. There's also a fluid percussion model that's more like a blast injury, and it's what it sounds like. There's a pressure of fluid that gets pushed towards their brain and causes a more diffuse kind of injury, like what you see in blast injuries. And then the ballistic model, I don't even really understand. I just barely was reading a paper about it and was like, that's insane. But it's just a high-speed hitting. I think it's similar to a controlled cortical impact, but it's faster and a deeper injury. And we, as far as animal models, we typically try to stick with mice and rats.
Mm-hmm.
We can have a lot of them. They're relatively inexpensive to keep alive and house and all of these things. Animal models are sort of a catch-22 because you can control for a lot of the environmental factors, but then you don't get a real translational picture to what's actually happening in humans. Another problem with some animal models is that they, like rats and mice, are what's called gyrencephalic. So they have a smooth brain. They don't have the bumps that we have in our brain. There are some mammals that do, ferrets, for example, are one of the, or I'm sorry, ferrets are gyrencephalic. I'm just going to stop saying those words because now I'm confusing myself. So rats and mice have smooth brains. Ferrets actually have the same similar bumps in brains as what we have, and they're, the localization of the structures in their brain are more similar to ours. So a lot of TBI research in the future is sort of, a lot of people are pushing towards using animals more like ferrets. One of the problems is that they're more expensive. They're harder to care for. It's harder to find. So there's going to be a little catch up with that, but yeah.
Well, that's phenomenal. And there's so many different areas that can relate. And I think that's good. I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, with the different perspectives, but I think it's good at least getting some sort of research done with a similar brain pattern, et cetera. It's definitely helpful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and one of the things I think that is helpful is a great source of education as well. What I'm referring to is, do you believe that there's a molecular difference between different types of TBIs?
And this is kind of an intriguing question in the research field in general. It makes logical sense that there is a molecular difference between the different types of TBI. If you get hit with a hammer, it's going to be different than if you're by a blast injury. Like, that causes completely different injury, physical injury profiles. So it stands to reason that at the cellular and molecular level, it would also be different. The trick with that is there's very little to nothing in the literature about what the molecular differences between these different injury types is. So I'm sure there is. It makes sense. We know that blast injuries and more diffuse injuries cause more diffuse axonal type things. So the signal transduction part of the neuron gets messed up more differently than whenever it's a contusional injury, where cell bodies tend to be more of a problem, but we don't actually know what the molecular mechanisms in recovery or any of that stuff really is as of yet.
Yeah, keyword as of yet. It's going to continue to advance. That's what's good.
Yeah.
So, speaking about the differences in continuing education and so forth, what's different about your research approach compared to the type of research that's already been done in TBI biomarkers?
So a lot has been done already looking for biomarkers for TBI. And what I mean by biomarkers is something that you can draw from like your blood or peripheral fluids. There's even been some work in saliva to inform on diagnostics about an injury. You can do biomarkers for like cancer and things like that, where there's something floating around in your blood that doctors can use to identify the severity of whatever's happening. There is currently no such thing like that nature for TBI. And a lot of what has been done in TBI biomarker research so far has been done on proteins, which is all well and good. There have actually been some decent progress made with things like tau and SB100. So there are some markers that look promising. The problem with those is that proteins are huge molecules and they don't readily efflux from the brain. So we all know that it's hard to get things into the brain because of the blood-brain barrier, but it's just as difficult to get things out. And there is transient disruption of the blood-brain barrier following an injury, but it's not consistent and should go away after a while. And that's really the only way these whole proteins are getting out of the brain is when there's that disruption of the blood-brain barrier.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is look at peptides. Peptides are basically fragments of proteins. So they're smaller. They can readily pass through the efflux pathways of the brain to peripheral fluids, where it'd be easier to see them and easier to qualify them and quantify them and identify what's actually going on. Peptides, it's been shown that that peptides are bioactive and that they respond in different ways to different injuries. So there's been research that shows that inhalation exposure of carbon nanotubes, so that's in your lungs, that they can measure differences in peptides in their blood, in these people's blood, that then can lead to neuroinflammation down the road in a similar way that, why are words so hard for me today? The asbestos does.
It's a habit for all of us. No, very understandable. You know, speaking of with the differences, comparison and research, it's great that there's going to be a change, not only short-term, but also long-term. And most importantly, the techniques and also what it will recover. But during research, and I always get confusion on pronouncing this correctly, so please forgive me. But I'm curious, why peptides instead of proteins or other small molecules?
Largely because the peptides pass more readily from through the blood-brain barrier back into the peripheral system, and that's a completely different mechanism than the way things get into the brain. Mm-hmm. Like it is, they're both equally selective, but there's less known about the efflux. The reason for not focusing on other small molecules, at least for my project, is largely just because the Ottens lab in particular is well established with looking at the peptidome and identifying those types of things. It's just more facilitated in this setting. Small molecules, I personally think, will end up being, there's just so many of them, and they're impacting so many different things. Small molecules affect like everything. So it just gets difficult to tease out what could actually be causing an impact versus what's just part of the system on a regular basis.
You know, that's very, very informative information and important. You know, speaking of important and actual being on point, what is the actual point of these biomarkers we're discussing?
So these biomarkers can actually be really cool. They can inform on the severity of an injury or like the progression of cancer and things like that. So they fulfill a diagnostic role. On top of that, we could use these biomarkers to identify what's actually happening in the brain. One thing that's kind of a downside, well, I guess there's a lot of downsides to TBI, but one thing that's a major downside is that neuroimaging isn't sensitive enough to detect molecular changes. And that's where all of the repair is happening, is on the molecular level. That's what all of the medications should be targeting, is things that's happening on a molecular level. But the images can't show you those things. They're just not sensitive enough. It's too tiny. These biomarkers could give us information on what's happening at that molecular level. And they can help us, hopefully, one of the aims of my project is to try and see if we can predict what's called secondary sequelae.
Mm-hmm.
So the primary injury is whenever you actually get the TBI. The secondary sequelae is things like elevated intracranial pressure and edema and things like that. So we're trying to see if maybe we could use these biomarkers that we're finding in the blood, and maybe they're elevated just prior to a secondary stroke happening or increased intracranial pressure, and try and prevent that from happening. So in that sense, they could potentially inform on the medication that should be administered and in what doses based off of, oh, this person has this peptide that's elevated, and that's usually indicative that this is going to happen. So to prevent that, we can, you know, try and prophylactically treat the problem.
You know, and speaking of problem, I've had a lot of survivors and even caregivers ask me about this, and I think this is going to be great to get this answer finally done from not just a survivor perspective, but most importantly, an understanding of both brain injuries, but also behind the wheel of research. What I'm referring to is, how would things that happen in the brain wind up in urine?
So there's the efflux pathway in the brain is still relatively new. There's some debate about whether it should be called the glymphatic pathway or the perivascular pathway, just
mm-hmm.
because scientists like to get picky about words.
Right.
but so as fluid in the vasculature of your brain, waste gets pushed out through the perivascular space in essentially lymphatics, but it's not quite the same as the lymphatic system because our brains have to be all special and separated and difficult like that. But once it gets into that secondary fluid, it goes through the cervical lymph nodes, where it then passes into our lymphatic system, which then filters into the blood. And then from the blood, they filter through our kidney and filter into urine, which is another benefit to using peptides rather than proteins, is that there's not a whole lot of proteins in your urine. And if there is proteins in your urine, there's something wrong and your kidney is probably shutting down. So you have other problems besides just brain injury. But the peptides are small enough and oftentimes your kidneys selectively filter different charges of molecules, and oftentimes these peptides are the appropriate charge to make it through the glymphatics, or not the glymphatics, the glomeruli, and wind up in your urine, which would then facilitate instances where you have a kid who is playing soccer and maybe got hit in the head or headbutt somebody too hard, and we can then potentially use their urine to test and see if any of these biomarker peptides show up there and see if they actually had a mild TBI and we just weren't aware of it. Because along with our information about concussions and going to sleep after them rather than staying awake, we're finding that even mild injuries can have long-lasting effects, especially if you're getting repeated injuries, because then you end up with things like CTE. It doesn't have to be a major injury that knocked you unconscious or put you in a coma for a month. It can be a simple, mild injury, but a lot of times those go undetected. So yeah, in pediatric instances where they might not want to go into an MRI machine or something like that, and they're scared because they're a little kid, we can just test their urine. We don't even have to poke them with a needle. That's the dream, right? No one has to be scared and you can still get the information. And additionally, especially with the military aspect of all of this, is that sometimes when these kinds of things happen, you're in the middle of nowhere and don't have access to medical care and things like that. But if we could eventually develop all of this and turn it into a test strip that you can just stick in a stream of urine and it changes a certain color to tell you that, hey, you need to get checked out whenever you get back, that would even help monumentally. So the fact that we can get things from the brain into the urine is just another really exciting aspect of all of this that I'm really looking forward to trying to tease out. And I'm just really excited about this project in general.
I bet you are. And I'm sure everyone is, not only the general public for having an understanding, but also for those that, like yourself, have either know someone in their family or personally have been touched by a brain injury or anything with the brain.
Right. And I mean, there's so many different aspects of all of it. The brain to me is just fascinating. It's astounding. And then there's the fact that brain injuries are correlative with dementia and Alzheimer's. We still don't fully understand that link either. We just know that it's there.
Exactly.
But we still have to figure out a way to try and fix it and help.
But I think, again, that also with the phenomenal update with continuing education that's happened in the last decade, and also with the daily change in electronics and technology, it's really going to grab, like you said, more of a stronger hold on education and discovering not only more about the brain and especially ways to handle brain injuries with proper treatment, etc., but also how different scans maybe become an opportunity to be able to determine more in depth the outcome of a brain injury or a individual's brain injury based on their brain, of course.
Oh, absolutely. The next 10 years or so are going to, I think, will be absolutely insane.
I agree.
As far as how well things move forward in the brain injury field.
Oh, I agree. And speaking of, you know, the next 10 years, but also with the updates, from your personal perspective, do you have any, you know, guidance for either caregivers? We'll just mainly focus on caregivers because it's very rare that survivors are independent. So with caregivers, what are some of the suggestions or guidance that you really hope that they, you know, put attention on?
I would say find organizations like TBI One Love where, you know, there is a support system. You can network with other people. You are not, keep in mind that as a caregiver, you are not alone, that yes, the injured person is your, everyone is focused on them, but you can't refill a glass and you can't fill something from an empty glass. You know, you still have to take care of yourself. And sometimes that means taking a step back and talking to people who are in a similar situation as you, who understand how frustrating it can be, because it's not always improvements and it's not always successes. There are struggles and it sucks sometimes, but you can't live down in that awful spot where you're just like, this is my life now and it's terrible and this person that I care about is never going to be the same. But you have to, it's okay to feel those things, but move past it. Don't live there and find people in networks and talk to people, get to know each other, you know, networks. We're social beings. We need people who understand. So find people that understand and that you can vent to.
Exactly. And it's a phenomenal difference when you have someone not only that you can communicate with, that's one thing, but when you have someone that you can communicate with more in depth and really feel that comfort level, not only at first, but also with it developing, that is a win-win for both sides of the table.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're definitely, and I appreciate the referral recommendations, but yes, it is definitely important, not only for survivors, but especially caregivers, because everyone is touched by a brain injury. So they need to make sure that everyone gets the proper attendance, questions, answers, and of course, support that is needed.
Absolutely.
That is great. You know, so with your research, what do you think the one of the biggest findings or changes that you might be able to process?
Oh, I'm hoping that there would be, it's so tough. I would like for there to be some magical target for medications that would just help everybody, but that won't work because it's too different and everybody's so different.
True.
It would be great if we could just find that one specific little target, like, oh, if we can find a drug that fixes this one specific thing, brain injuries will be a million times better. Because, I mean, we figured out how to make them more survivable. We can keep people alive after the injuries, but we still can't improve quality of life as well afterwards. I think just being able to classify things into more specific profiles would be the most exciting thing. Like,
yeah, that's a really good answer, and that would be exciting just because, as we both know, that brain injuries are obviously very widespread, different styles, different ways, different age brackets, but they're really not that common. The only similarity is, of course, can either be the same area of the brain or just the title of the brain injury. So when you can find more similarities, I think both short and long-term success are going to be able to categorize, be able to alter changes with that area of the brain or that similarity to the extent, and it's going to have a great positive outcome for everyone.
Right. If we can find bigger pools of similarities, that would be great.
It would, yes, ma'am. And you know what? It's going to continue to develop, but with your hand behind the wheel, it's going to continue to really move forward a lot faster than DeCeded, because when there's people like you that are not only understanding it from personal status, but also making sure that it's continuing to get the push and going with the system instead of being lost in the crowd, that is phenomenal. So thank you for all you do, are, and your service once again.
Oh, you're very welcome. I hope I can live up to it.
Hey, you will. It's phenomenal. For our listeners, do you have any ways that they can either just follow your movement or learn more about you?
If you really want to learn more about me, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can email me. My email at school is platfootk@vcu.edu. VCU also is just kind of an outstanding resource for traumatic brain injury in general. Two editors of the Journal of Neurotrauma are actually VCU faculty members or former faculty members. Dr. Pablo Jock retired, but so we like brain injuries here at VCU.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely make sure to share that LinkedIn comment. And we just want to thank you once again for not only your impact and understanding and difference making, but of course your service as well. Thank you so much for the opportunity to have you on the show tonight.
Of course. And thank you for everything you're doing.
Hey, thank you. That means more than you know, especially coming from a service member, but also a researcher and a vet. And before we go, do you have any questions you would like to ask me?
I do not.
Okay, just want to make sure. I don't want you to think like he asked me all these questions, but maybe I might ask something him. Just want to double check.
Nope.
Hey, well, Kelly, I really appreciate it. Congratulations on your movement, your winning success, and also the ability for us to connect. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll send people your way, and we look forward to watching your growth and difference-making and keeping in touch, of course.
Oh, for sure. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, bye. Wow, everyone. What a phenomenal show and difference-making Kelly was able to share, not only from her understanding, but key elements for not only, of course, survivors and caregivers, but also key elements to understand about the brain and, of course, brain injuries and her goal setting with the research. If you would like to hear more about her and or follow her like she listed, she has a LinkedIn account. So if you're on LinkedIn, search Kelly Platfoot, P-L-A-T-F-O-O-T, and you'll be able to find her. Also contact us and we'd be happy to share the link. Make sure to stay tuned with our continuing input with brain injury recovery, brain injury announcements, and also brain health at tbiwinlove.org and all forms of social media as well. Hit the like button and make sure that together we can work together to make everyone's life even better. Stay tuned. One love.